Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate. All right, I'm just going to say it. Soft landing. Maybe? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, the 27th day of July. Good as always to have you along, everybody. With apologies to William McChesney Martin, the Federal Reserve has spent the past year and a half doing its very best to take away the punch bowl. This economy, meanwhile, has said, no, 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 party's just getting going. Martin, for those unfamiliar, the Fed chair, the longest-serving Fed chair, by the way, who said it is the central bank's job to take away the punch bowl just as the party is getting going. And I will let that metaphor go. After this, I promise, we got from the good people at the Commerce Department this morning the first estimate of gross domestic product April through June, and consumers and businesses in this economy are doing everything but dancing on the table. The economy grew 2.4% in the second quarter, that is annualized, of course, and it did it in the face of what everybody had been guessing would be something quite a bit slower. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman gets us going.
The word resilient got thrown around a lot today to describe an economy that's bucking interest rate hikes from the Fed and contraction in the housing sector. Sean Snaith, director of the Institute for Economic Forecasting at the University of Central Florida, characterized the economy this way.
It seems to be thus far recession resistant.
So where's all this resilience coming from? First, business investment, up nearly 8%. Paul Ashworth at Capital Economics says auto and airplane factories are humming.
A rebound in transportation equipment investment, which is all to do with easing supply shortages.
Plus, there's been a boom in factory building for semiconductors and electric vehicles, says Robert Frick at Navy Federal Credit Union.
All the Biden infrastructure stuff, Inflation Reduction Act, CHIPS Act, have started kind of a cycle of high-tech investment, and that's going to trickle through to equipment, hiring.
The other major force sustaining the economy is U.S. consumers. Now, our spending did slow, growing about 1.5% compared to more than 4% in the first quarter. And that could be a problem, says Frick, as consumers spend down their savings and run up their credit card bills.
Prices have gone up so much for everything from healthcare to education to utilities. Consumers are definitely becoming guarded in their spending, no question. A lot more spending is going on at discounters.
All the economists I talked to today still expect economic growth to taper off later this year, but they agree a soft landing is definitely in the cards. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
One of the reasons that this economy grew at a faster rate in the second quarter than it did in the first is that businesses spent more on inventories. If that gives you pause, it's probably because you have heard here and elsewhere that consumers haven't been buying as much stuff as they were buying earlier in the pandemic. As Marketplace's Justin Ho reports, it is a sign that businesses are getting just a little bit better at figuring out how much inventory is the right amount of inventory.
Let's start with a little context. Back at the end of last year, inventory levels rose by a lot. Jason Miller, a professor of supply chain management at Michigan State University, says that was partly because products that businesses ordered earlier in 2022 finally arrived.
But also the fact that sales in certain product categories really sort of slowed down in the fourth quarter of last year, and firms ended up overordering because those sales slowed more than expected.
Then, in the first quarter of this year, inventories barely changed. Miller says businesses learn that they shouldn't overorder because consumers might not show up.
You know, inventory managers have been able to get sort of a better sense of where demand is going to be.
In the second quarter of this year, inventories did move up again. But Kathy Bosjancic, chief economist at Nationwide, says that buildup was tiny by historical standards.
what I take away is that companies are being cautious in building up their inventories. And we see that across the manufacturing, wholesale, and the retail sector.
Bosjancic says it's a good sign that companies are figuring out the right amount of inventory they need.
For now, they're comfortable with the goods that they have on hand. And it may be the levels are slightly higher, you know, than in the past, but they're certainly not as bloated as they were a year ago.
The downside, Bosjancic says consumers can expect fewer discounts since companies aren't as desperate to get rid of extra products. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
On Wall Street this Thursday, stocks go down too, you know. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. You know that thing where you haven't talked to somebody in a really long time? April Hemmes, it has been forever.
I know. I thought everybody said, does Kai not like you anymore? I go, I don't know.
I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
No, you didn't hurt my feelings. You hurt all of your listeners' feelings.
My apologies then to all of you for depriving you of April Hemmes, Iowa corn and soybean farmer extraordinaire. We got her on the phone this morning and we were so busy catching up, we almost forgot to hit that record button.
I've done that before because I have said something and you had it on record. So, yeah, I'm good to go.
All right, good. So, look, how are things down on the farm?
Hot and dry. I mean, that's all there is to it.
So that's not good if you're trying to grow things, right?
No, and I was watching the news the other day. The last time Iowa was not in a drought was May 2020.
Really?
So that's, yes, I couldn't believe it. And, I mean, our soils can hold moisture. They're really good, thick, black dirt with a lot of organic matter. But that's 3 years of hot and dry. And that's a long time to depend. But my beans and corn are looking okay for now. They're holding their own, but I'm not going to have an average crop by any means. So.
Well, wow. Okay, so two things. Number one, define looking okay. For the layperson, what does that mean?
It means they're green. They're putting pods on for soybeans. Corn is growing a ear, you know, and it's pollinated. Mm-hmm. The most important part is getting rain during pollination when the pollen falls from the tassel down to those little hairs. They all go to a corn kernel. And I did get a good rain then. So we're kind of getting spoon-fed rain as we go. So that's what I mean looking okay.
All right, but if you're not going to have an average crop, and you and I have talked about this before, right? You borrow money up front to get the seed and the fertilizer and blah, blah, blah. So if you're not going to get an average crop, your cash return will be lower, and thus your loan balance will not work out well for you.
Well, yeah, that's farming, buddy. You know, that's like on the farm. That's our everyday life. No, yeah, exactly. But we do have crop insurance. So I purchase crop insurance. The kind I get is a revenue assurance. So I'm assured revenue.
Hmm.
So I can pay the bank back. Yeah. Period. End of story. And any bank that lends that much money wants you to get that.
Yes. What about prices? When you take it to market or when you're going to take it to market, right? Because I don't know. Are you selling futures?
Well, a lot of people do that. I forward cash grain or forward contract.
Okay.
Like right now I could sell March, you know, delivery in March and set my cash price or set the basis. A lot of people do options to set that bottom. So, you know, if the bottom falls out, but I'm telling you, Kai, I need some kind of a collar because the whiplash I'm getting from these markets, you know, up one day 50, down 40 the next, and everything adds to it.
So this is the layperson's question. Why do you check prices all the time? I mean, you just grow and keep your head down, and then at the end of the day, you sell.
Well, no, I check prices. If I'm comfortable selling and I know I'm making a profit, I don't have a problem selling. It's just that when it gets below my cost of production, and it was looking like corn was going that way, and then it came back up, so. It's been quite a ride this year, though.
Can I ask you about, last time we talked, or one of the maybe a time before that, we were talking about cost of inputs and inflation. Has mm-hmm. that stabilized for you, or are you still dealing with it?
No, we're still dealing with getting parts. That's still not as bad as it was, yeah. but the price is way up there. But like, for instance, Roundup or glyphosate,
right.
some places aren't even taking it back. If you had leftovers, they're not going to take it back because the price has come down so far. And like, I might have bought it really high. So they don't want to refund me that high price. So the prices on chemicals are coming down. But it's still the game we play.
Yeah. We've talked before about how involved you are internationally with, being a, yeah. for lack of a better word, an Iowa agriculture ambassador. Let me ask you how you're looking at the Russia thing and then backing out of grain agreements and all of those things that, yeah. that reach right down to small town Iowa.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's crazy. And that's part of the whiplash in the markets. I literally yesterday just got back from Turkey. So, watching those ships come down from the Black Sea,
yeah.
just knowing that, miles down the road, there's rockets flying, there's bombs going off. But I tell you what, that it really adds to the drastic swings in the market.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet so. It does. April Hemmes, she's our corn and soybean farmer right in Iowa. April, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Great to talk to you.
The National Association of Realtors told us today that pending home sales, that's a leading indicator of housing market activity, right? Pending, yet to come. Anyway, they rose last month for the first time since February. But with interest rates where they are, high, home prices too, right? Still high. Some people are moving out of more expensive cities or making home ownership a team sport. That's the setup for this next installment of our series, Adventures in Housing.
Hi, my name is Cass Lang.
And my name is Jordan Hayden,
and we live in Berry City,
Vermont. So Cass and I actually met on the first day of our college classes, and we instantly became best friends. Once we graduated, we decided that we would live together as well, so we rented lots of apartments in New York City.
We spent a lot of time jumping from place to place, as you do as a renter.
Constantly, money was always at the forefront of that conversation. It was really difficult for us to find places within our price point and decided one day that we were kind of over that.
And I swear it was so quick after that.
We were applying for jobs.
We were applying for jobs. I found a job. And
I was saying goodbye to all of my cockroach friends.
Yes.
In Brooklyn.
When we made the decision to live in Vermont full time, we just started living in Airbnbs.
But I think when we thought about leaving New York behind, we thought about leaving space. Other things behind as well and just wanting something of our own.
No more landlord.
Right.
No more paying somebody else.
I know for me personally, I had no concerns about getting a house with you.
Yeah.
I mean, we had been friends for so long, and we'd lived in apartments for years and years, so I didn't see it.
Yeah, you proved you could pay your bills.
And at the same time, too, I think, the traditional notion of home buying and life, mm-hmm. we see things just...
a little differently.
Yeah.
We paid, I guess the bank paid, $250,000 for the house that we're currently in. And the loan that we have is a special loan for first-time home buyers. Basically, the offer was 3% down for 30 years. So 3% down ended up being around $14,000.
Yeah. And it was doable
and
for
us. Yeah. We made that work.
Yeah. I started working pretty much when I was 14 years old. I grew up in a very rural environment, so I was out there chopping tobacco and... By the time we were looking for a house, I did have enough saved up from all of that time that I could actually put down the down payment.
I had decided to take some money out of my retirement fund, but I thought that it was worth it because I really wanted a house.
Because let's be real, we're probably not going to retire, right?
No, what are the odds of you retiring?
It's not looking
slim.
Good.
Truly, every day I wake up and I'm like, I have a home.
We have a driveway, we have a yard, we have a washer dryer. Like,
we can have a cat.
We don't have a set timeline of how long we're going to co-own this specific home, but we just know that right now it works really well. We're really happy here, and we have a lot of big plans that we want to accomplish here.
Cass Lang and Jordan Hayden from the home they co-own in Barrie City, Vermont. If you've got an adventure in housing, we want to hear about it. Marketplace.org is where you can do that. And while I've got you, no matter where you live, you can find the Marketplace Morning Report right where you need it, Monday through Friday, telling you everything you need to know to start your economic day. Coming up.
We are experiencing high call volume at this time.
Hold, please. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials off 237 points today. I'm so unused to big numbers on the negative side for the Dow. 0.2%, 35,282. The NASDAQ down 77 points, about 0.5%, 14,050. The S&P 500 off 29 points, about 0.6%, 45,037. Meta Platform shot up 4.4% today. The parent company of Facebook posted strong second quarter results, also issued positive guidance for the current quarter. Chipotle Mexican Grill cooled 9.8% today on worse than expected second quarter revenue, although its earnings did beat expectations. Capitalism, right? Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note, here you go, a four handle, 4.00% on the 10-year. You're listening to Marketplace. Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Matt Levin did a story for us last week about artificial intelligence and the business of the law, in which, with my permission, he'd gotten an AI company to do a fake version of me, of my voice, I mean. I personally didn't think it sounded much like me, but I mention it because someday it will. There are a pair of reports out this week, one from the McKinsey Global Institute, the other one from Pew, looking at how AI is going to affect our jobs. Both say it's most likely to affect higher paid white collar jobs that require more education, but it's lower paid jobs in customer service and office support and factories that McKinsey says are more likely to just start disappearing because of AI and automation. Marketplace's Samantha Fields is on that one.
AI is coming for all of us, whether you work at a coffee shop, at a factory, in an office.
Everyone's job is going to be affected.
Bhaskar Chakravorty at the Fletcher School at Tufts University says the question we should all be asking is,
Does that mean my job is going to be displaced, whether my job is going to be cut in half, or whether my job actually becomes more enjoyable because I have an assistant?
Automation and AI already do all sorts of jobs, in grocery stores, at factories, in customer support.
If you think about somebody who's working in a contact center, either responding to customers, you know, on the phone or through email, chatbots do very similar things.
Michael Chui at the McKinsey Global Institute says by 2030, nearly 12 million people may need to change jobs because of advances in automation and AI, mostly those working in lower-paying jobs with a lot of repetitive tasks. But he says that doesn't have to be a bad thing.
A lot of the growth that we see is in occupations that have higher wages. And so if we can help the labor force and individual workers transition from work that is lower paid into work that's higher paid, that's all for the good.
But he says it will be a huge challenge. And generative AI is going to affect lots of those higher paid jobs too, some in major ways. Rakesh Kochhar at Pew Research says there's still a lot of uncertainty about what that'll look like.
Will it help web developers become more creative, perhaps turn to other activities that they can do while AI does working with computers? Or does it just replace the web developer? We don't know that.
But he says Pew found a lot of people are optimistic that AI could change their jobs for the better. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Let's say you've got a problem with something you bought, or maybe you need to talk to your insurance company, or maybe it's an airline ticket or a piece of software or whatever. You call customer service, really any customer service line, and you're more likely than not to hear an automated voice tell you it could be a while before you can talk to an agent, because it seems that just about every call center right now is facing unusually high call volumes. Unusually high has become now usual. So we asked Marketplace's Savannah Marr to make some calls.
In the very early days of the pandemic, a lot of customer service lines really were swamped since we couldn't deal with our problems at stores and banks and the cable company in person. But those recorded warnings seem to be here to stay.
We are experiencing high call volume at this time, and as a result, you may experience long waits.
I've joked about this a lot in the sense that, is it unusual if it's been every month for the past 3 years?
Christina McAllister is a customer service analyst with Forrester. For most companies, she says call volumes have returned to something like normal. What's really changed is the number of human representatives working the phones. She says call centers have always been tough to staff.
If the average attrition at kind of a regular role might be like 7% or something like that, the contact center might be 50.
Meaning that a company can expect half of new employees hired to quit within a year. And McAllister says the problem is getting worse. The pandemic shut down a lot of overseas call centers. And here in the US, the labor shortage has allowed a lot of low-wage workers to trade up. So those automated messages are covering for staff shortages and helping manage expectations, says Jeff Galino with the call center analytics firm CallMiner.
If I tell you it's going to be a long wait and then I answer your call in 2 minutes, then I might get to delight you by that.
He says there's a reason companies are playing these games instead of investing in a more pleasant experience for callers.
Looking to get help faster?
Rather than wait on hold.
Their preferred channel is you get on here and you start chatting.
Did you know you can message with us directly?
Download our app at www.
Outsourcing the work to a bot is a lot cheaper than paying a human agent. Which is fine if you have a simple question, like, what's the baggage weight limit on my flight in 6 weeks? But what if you're about to miss your connection and you need a solution now? Galino says nudging customers toward digital channels takes some pressure off the call center. But it also means the problems human agents do field are the most complex.
They exist to manage the difficult, the things that haven't been easily automated.
Meanwhile, consumers are getting more demanding. Forrester surveyed call center leaders in 2021. 70% reported that their agents were dealing with more emotionally charged calls than ever before.
It is hard to get shouted at every single day.
Christina McAllister says this brings us back to the staffing problem. To retain workers in that environment, she says they need to be empowered to hang up the phone when callers' frustration escalates to rage.
What I have heard from agents is that it is so much better for their own morale that they have that little bit of control to stop someone from yelling at them at work.
I've only managed to pull this off once, but boy howdy, it was fantastic.
That's a call center worker named Amanda, remembering a particularly hostile caller who demanded that she bend company rules on their behalf, since they'd been a loyal customer for years.
I told them, just because I've shopped at Home Depot for over 10 years does not allow me to take their forklifts for a joyride.
Amanda asked us not to use her last name, since that could get her in trouble at work, a big corporation that helps people make travel arrangements, and that she says is severely understaffed. She believes her company should improve pay and working conditions so that staffing isn't such a challenge. But she says customers could also help.
Please remember, there's another human being on the end of that phone.
If we're tired of those automated messages telling us we're in for an unusually long wait, she says we, as callers, could be a little more polite when it's finally our turn. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, which is being delivered, I should tell you, from a 20,000 or so square foot office space, which had, I think, 8 people in it today, maybe 7. Anyway, there is a commercial property brokerage firm called Jones Lang LaSalle, which told Bloomberg today that for what they believe is the first time ever, the net amount of office space in this economy is going to fall this year. Less than 5 million square feet of new offices are being built this year. Almost 15 million square feet are being removed from the market or repurposed. Now, look, I don't get to decide, but I'll bet you Marketplace Management will let you sublet here if you wanted to. All right, here's your moment of economic context. I was going to do a thing on new bank capital reserve proposals and Basel III requirements that came out today, but I mean, why be cruel, right? Instead, I will just give you a heads up that tomorrow at 8:30 Eastern, we will get the Fed's favorite inflation indicator, personal consumption expenditures. We, of course, will tell you about it. John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, and Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Amir Bibawe is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey, everyone. It's Rima Khreis, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.